Hello, this is Richard Davis, welcoming you to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. And if it's not too early, I'd like to start by wishing you a very happy new year. As usual, with the first edition of At Home This Morning of each year, this programme's going to be a look back at some of the best items that we've broadcast during 2017. We start off by hearing about a bus which is called Brighton Bell. Then we hear about a scheme that's been set up locally to combat loneliness. That's followed by a piece about a new magazine for the over 50s, the first issue of which was published in October. And we finish by hearing about the reopening of the Saltdean Lido, which took place in July. And as usual, we'll be giving out various email addresses, website addresses and telephone numbers during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing again a piece that was broadcast in October. Our reporter, Chris English, as I've said before, is keen on many forms of transport, and especially anything that's called Brighton Bell. He's already told us about the Brighton Bell Sailing Club and their yacht, which is based at Brighton Marina. And he's keeping a watching brief on the Brighton Bell train, which is due to come back into service fairly soon. But he actually came across a bus called Brighton Bell, and he couldn't resist the temptation to find out more about it. The bus is owned by Seaford and District Motor Services. So Chris went along to see them and spoke to David Mulpeter. And he began by asking David to tell him a bit about the bus.
Brighton Bell is a 1971 Leyland coach. It was first built as a National Express coach running out of Freshfield Road in Brighton. It was later converted into an executive coach with, as you see, the reclining seats, tables, lighting, and called the Southdown Diplomat. And that was done by Southdown of Victoria Road and their Portslade Works. Lastly, then became part of the Brighton Hove fleet. Brighton Hove painted it in the colours you see now, which is the old Brighton Bell colours, as it was a local sort of event and is used for corporate and private hire in the Brighton area.
So what sort of thing, I mean, you talk about corporate and private hire, I mean, can anybody hire it?
Anyone can hire the bus. It goes out to like Goodwood Festival of Speed, Epsom Derby, birthday parties, weddings, that sort of thing. That's what it gets used for mainly.
And can you have dinner on board? I mean, can you do catering like the Pullman train does?
We don't have any catering yourselves, but you could have your own food or vol-au-vents, that sort of thing, brought on board if you wanted to. Yeah, that's not a problem.
So are there any restrictions at all as to what hirers can do?
We don't do a lot of late night hires with them because of the vehicle and high spirits, that sort of thing. But basically, anyone can hire the bus for an event. There's no real restrictions other than out late at night.
So tell us a bit about it. Describe the interior of the bus for us.
The interior of the bus is much changed. It's 2+1 seating as opposed to 2+2. So you've got a much wider seat. You've got a lot of foot room because there's only 22 seats and they're all fully reclining seats. You've got a table, the table lights, the curtains, toilet at the back. And it's a very, I think, really superb historical executive coach.
Not air conditioned, presumably.
Because no, you've got sliding windows on these here. If you want to air conditioning, you open the window.
The good old fashioned way. Now, notice that this isn't the only historic vehicle you've got here.
No, we have about 14 vintage vehicles. Part of our business is we do a lot of heritage vintage vehicle hire, as well as our mainstream bus and coach operation. And we also do the Eastbourne sightseeing open top buses. So you'll see we've got buses from 1931 up to 2012.
But presumably you can't just buy spare parts off the shelf.
No, we've got a team here that we do manufacture some of our own parts. But yes, surprisingly, with the modern technologies around today, you can get, if you've got a pattern part, you probably can get one made.
So it's not a problem as far as keeping them running?
No, it might take longer than normal. You can't nip down to Halfords and say, I'd like this. It may be, for example, we've got a vehicle, we're waiting for a new clutch in, that's 4 weeks. But it can be done.
What's the attraction of all this? You're running a business, but you're obviously an enthusiast as well.
I've been interested in transport since I was knee-high. And buses, I always liked vintage buses. I had a bus when I was about 16, and it's sort of grown from there, really, my enthusiasm for it. My personal thing is I like the older vehicles, but the modern day buses pays the wages.
What's the attraction of an old vehicle?
I think it's old heritage. People like to look back in time and heritage, and something's different. All the buses we have here are unique in some way. They're either their only one survivor. We've got two or three here which are unique. They are the only one left. And I think that's what people go for, something unique. If you have a wedding, people want something different or to be different to everyone else, and that's why they're hiring the buses.
I just heard a bus start up in the background, so they're all operational.
They've got two under restoration behind us, which are for next year, but everything else is up and running and all licensed, ready to go.
I mean, how difficult is it with modern requirements for safety and that sort of thing to keep these vintage vehicles running?
On the safety, they're all inspected. There's two types of inspection. There's what we have, a safety service, and we have a safety service plus, which involves a more in-depth one. But basically, they're inspected every 6 weeks. So there's a lot of work goes into inspecting them to keep them going.
And simple things like tyres, presumably you can get those?
Yes, there's no problem getting tyres. Again, there's some more of a lead time. I mean, I can ring up for a modern bus and have a tyre firm down here in 2 hours. With the older ones, there's normally 2 or 3 days. But they're still available.
And you talked about restoration behind us. Uh-huh. There's basically a coach that's just a wooden frame.
Yeah, that's a 1931 Dennis, which is going to full rebuild. The chassis has all been rebuilt, and now the carpenter's started on the frame.
How long does that take?
We're hoping for the one behind us, which is the Dennis Falcon, for the 2019 season. The one to the other side of it, the Maudsley, which is a 1931 Maudsley, that should be ready next year for season.
Were they all local to Brighton and Hove and Sussex, or were they from all parts of the country?
The majority are local. The two coaches, the one in the frame you see behind us is a Southdown bus. The one next to it is not from a company in Essex. But most of these are from Southdown, in the Southdown area between Portsmouth and Brighton and Eastbourne.
And if somebody wants to hire one of these buses, how do they go about it?
They either go on the website, this is stephendistrict.co.uk, and on our website there's an application form for a hire, and it's got pictures of all the buses, so you can select which one you want, or just give the office a ring, speak to the girls in the office.
And what sort of cost would I be involved in hiring the Brighton Bell?
It's hard to say. It depends on the bill. It depends on how long you've got the vehicle, where you're going to, because fuel and driver's wages. So it could be anything from sort of £300 up to £600, depending where you want to go for a day hire.
So not a huge fortune.
They're not excessively expensive. I mean, so are some countries will charge really big money, but we pitch ourselves at what we believe is right, so everyone can enjoy them and have the day out, so they're affordable to everyone.
And finally, the attraction of restoring and working on these vehicles. Is it something in your blood, like it is with steam railway enthusiasts?
Yeah, I'm interested in railways as well. But most of the guys here work on them. It's when you see something that comes in, like you see the frame behind us, when you see that go out, you get quite a big buzz of, well, we did that. And that vehicle is restored and saved to everyone to enjoy for the future.
That's lovely. Thank you very much.
No problem.
David Mulpeter was telling Chris English about the vintage buses that have been restored by Seaford and District Motor Services Limited, and in particular one bus that they have in their garage, which is called Brighton Bell. As I say, all these vintage buses are available for hire, and you can find out more by going to Seaford and District Motor Services website, which is at seafordanddistrict, that's typed all as one word with no spaces, .co.uk. That's seafordanddistrict.co.uk. Or you can phone them on Brighton 510181. That's 01273 510181. Well, now on a more serious note, we go back to an item that was first broadcast in May. Here's Peter Lloyd to introduce it.
Loneliness has become one of the major problems of care, and this is largely because far more older people are living on their own. In many cases, a partner has died and the survivor chooses to carry on living in their own home. At the same time, people who are living alone do fall into a number of different categories. There are a number of people who are perfectly happy to spend most of the time reading novels or the paper or watching TV. and in particular in these days, telephoning or Skyping children and grandchildren. And then there are other people who are still physically active, who can get out and about and engaged in a lot of activities. Both of these categories of people, you might say, are still fully engaged with the society. But then there are other people who have physical problems and are, in fact, tied to the home. Those are the ones, perhaps, who are in danger of feeling lonely. Loneliness can lead to depression and then illness and maybe hospitalisation. But there are also organisations which provide support and companionship for people on their own. But one such organisation here in Brighton is Neighbourhood Care Scheme, which is lodged with the charity Impetus. And I have with me today Sean, who's been virtually managing the project for 18 years. But I think, Sean, that your volunteers do in fact provide support in a much wider range of ways.
First of all, thanks, Peter, for inviting me along today. I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to talk about our work. And first of all, I think you're right. There are very few people living on their own who have no contact. But there are a lot of people on their own whose only contact may be with paid carers who don't have time to talk. And so with the befriending, the core of it is actually that conversation and building a relationship. I give you just a few examples of the kind of things our volunteers start. The classic befriending example was between Stella and Sheila, and Stella had reached her 100th birthday. Sheila would do things like exchange library books for Stella, but also to engage, and they had lots to talk about. Sheila was particularly fond of Stella because she would have been the same age as her mother. But each week, also, Stella would give a question for Jim, Sheila's husband, to research on the internet. So they're always engaged in, like, intellectual stimulation. That can be actually really important. You know, you wait from week to week to see what you've got to say to each other. Or television, part of the pleasure of it is actually being able to talk about it with someone. So if each week you have that point where you can talk about what you've seen, it can make a very big difference. It may not sound a lot, an hour a week or an hour a fortnight. It can actually change people's lives. So it can give you a window and a connection with the world.
Yeah, well, I think it's excellent. Because I suppose the next thing to ask you is, how do you get your people who need the support and how do you recruit your volunteers? I think you told me that you've got over a couple of hundred volunteers, yeah, and may well be supporting up to 1,000 people in the course of a year.
I'll correct you on the numbers, but right, first I'll clarify. And I'll start with the volunteers first, yeah, because, like you said, I've been doing this job for 18 years, and in some ways I've got the nicest job in Brighton and Hove, because what I've been doing most of that time is actually tapping the very rich seam of neighbourly goodwill. People want to support their neighbours. Increasingly, people find us. People want to do this and they do a Google search and they'll find this opportunity. We also do a lot of, because we're neighbourhood focused, I've probably trodden most of the streets of Brighton Hove over the years, delivering leaflets through doors, which actually is very immediate. This is something that if people want to do it, they can do it very close to home. Altogether at the moment, we have probably between 200 and 300 volunteers on the books. With regard to our People We Support scheme members, they come to us in a variety of ways. Sometimes they will refer themselves if they see something come through the door, or if you're living in Manchester and worried about your mum in Brighton, you might phone up Age UK or the council, and they will point you in our direction. And as to the figure of 1,000, we do have, including volunteers and scheme members, we have 1,000 people in the books. But at any one time, we've got between 200 and 250 volunteers and 200 and 250 scheme members visiting. But we're matching one or two new volunteers every week, so it's always a changing group of people.
Mm. No, I think an important element of an organisation like yours is that you do in fact try to match volunteers with the person needing the help. Do you do an assessment of the needs of the person needing the support?
Yes.
And you explore what it is the volunteers would like to contribute?
Yes.
What sort of interests they have?
Yes, so if someone's referred to us, we will make, or one of our volunteer coordinators will make an assessment visit, go and visit them in their home, and, you know, clarify what they would like from a volunteer. And once we know what they like, their interests, and so on, when they would like a visitor, we will look for a volunteer. Then we recruit our volunteers, and all our volunteers, well, they go through a process that is probably equivalent to getting a paid employment. They have a formal interview with two members of staff, and they do a DBS, that's a disclosure and borrowing service check. I mean, basically, we're not looking for saints or anything. Just, I mean, the bottom line is that they're trustworthy and they want to do this, really. And then once we've got our volunteers, we look amongst our scheme members about people we think they might be able to visit in terms of when they're available, what their interests are. And then once we've discussed the people with the volunteer and they've identified maybe someone they think they would get on with, then we make the introduction and then follow up after that. You know, if someone don't get on, it's relatively easy matter to go apart and try again with someone who might be more appropriate.
Mm. No, I think one of the important features of an organisation like yours is that you are in fact providing ongoing support for the volunteers.
Yes, I mean, that's actually really, really critically important. If you've been seeing someone for 3, 4, 5 years, how they were when you started and how they are 5 years down the line, particularly if you're older, might have changed. And a really important role for all our volunteers, is looking out for the person that they're visiting and letting us know about that. Also, they may encounter things. For example, if someone begins to develop dementia or whatever, and they might need support with that. We also put on, in collaboration with other befriending schemes in the city, training relevant to volunteering. I think it was just last week I did a little session on dealing with difficult situations, supporting someone with visual impairment, coping with bereavement, you know. So we try and make training available for the volunteers who might need it.
So obviously this is an extremely valuable service these days, you know, particularly when we're living in an age of austerity.
Yes.
And at the same time, a recognition of the needs of social care as well as medical care.
Yeah, yes.
And one can only wish you well, but to wind up, can you give us a contact telephone number as to how to get in touch?
First of all, I'll give you the overall Impetus website, because if you know that, then you can find routes to get help or be a volunteer or use any of the other Impetus services. The website is www.bh-impetus, and the telephone number is 01273 775 888.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. Our message to anybody hearing this is, do get in touch if you would either like help or if you would like to give some help.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sean, very much.
Thank you, Peter, for inviting me.
Peter Lloyd was talking to Sean de Podesta of Impetus about their neighbourhood care scheme. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to their website, which is at www.bh-impetus.org.ncs. That's www.bfor-brighton-hove-impetus.org/N for November, C for Charlie, S for sugar, www.bh-impetus.org/NCS. Or you can phone them on Brighton 775888. That's 01273 775888. And you can email them. The email address is ncs@bh-impetus.org. That's ncs@bh-impetus.org. Well, back in October, the first edition of a new quarterly magazine intended for the over-50s market was published by a company based in Brighton. The magazine is called Silver, and it's produced by a company called Tidal Media. A few weeks before it was due to come out, Sam Harrington Lowe from Tidal Media came into our studio to tell me all about it. And I began by asking her who Tidal Media are.
Tidal Media has been set up for coming up to 3 years now. Largely we produce lifestyle magazines. We also work for clients, so we do contract publishing as well. More recently we found that sort of by default we've ended up doing quite a lot of digital and content strategy as people seek to be online more, and we do social media marketing. So it's quite a broad base. I guess the overarching thing is that we're a publishing house, but we're pretty multi-talented.
A publishing house for hire.
Publishing gun for hire, yeah.
So what's your personal background?
My personal background is fairly varied, although there has been a constant thread. I've always been a writer, and actually even when I was a kid I knew that I wanted to be a writer, so I've edited a number of different magazines and I've been a freelance writer for years. In between that I've also had an event management company, which was, oh gosh, I had that for about 10 or 11 years. I sold it a few years ago, but that was really good experience in terms of learning how to run a business. And then somehow I found myself sucked into another one, so now we have Tidal Media Publishing. So that's kind of my background in a nutshell, I think.
Right, so when did you set up Tidal Media?
In the beginning of 2015, I think.
All right, so it's a fairly
new company.
About
2.5 years old, yeah. Something like that.
New dynamic company.
Do you know, the first year was so tough. Because I've been through it before, you sort of forget how tough it is to set up a business. But it's okay, actually, you know. A bit of experience always really helps, and we had some investors, which also always really helps. But, it's starting to come really good now. It's great, actually.
Good. Now, what gave you the idea of setting up a magazine for the 50-plus market?
Well, now, you see, I am in my late 40s, and I was thinking... I just feel the same as I did when I was in my 20s, really. And I have plenty of friends who are in their 50s and even 60s who really aren't old. And I think we live longer, and there is a huge gap in the market for not just a magazine, but a number of products, I think, that address the 50 and 60-year-olds, that sort of generation. And they're just not being spoken to properly. You should remember that people in their 50s and 60s now grew up through this sort of 60s and 70s. They've seen massive social change and some cultural stuff that makes my head spin. So these are quite unshockable, experienced people, and yet we're talking to them as if they were our grandparents. So we looked at this and I just said, you know what, there isn't anything that does this properly, so we should do one. So there you go. That was it, really. It was as simple as that.
Yeah, so you thought there was a gap in the market, basically.
Yeah. More than that, actually. Mm. I was just looking and thinking there isn't anything that really addresses people effectively, but without being patronising. You know, the market's changed. People in their 50s and 60s just aren't old. My dad is 76 and he's got a job. And, you know, people are working longer, living longer, you know, starting new businesses in their 50s and 60s, travelling the world. There's all sorts of stuff, you know. And just there isn't a platform that speaks directly to that market, I don't think.
What sort of subjects do you cover in the magazine?
Well, I think with any lifestyle publication, it is about the stuff that we do in our lives. Actually, one of the things that's come up several times, people have commented on the website and emailed us and said, you know, can we have stuff for guys? Because these magazines are really historically full of women's stuff. And actually, we get more engagement when we've, you know, put articles up. Women tend to respond more. We can see our audience demographics as well. It's about 70% women. But actually, there's a big gap there as well. Mm. So talking to chaps. So really, you know, the food and drink's a big one. Travel's a huge one. Actually, more biting cultural articles as well, you know, about the challenges that people face as they're growing older, learning new skills. I don't know, relationships with their family, their kids, that kind of stuff. So, you know, a lot of that kind of thing, really. It's stuff that's really of interest to people rather than just like, wow, that's a nice dress. Motors is a big thing, gardening's a huge thing, you know, that kind of stuff, I think. But we wanted to make it a bit more challenging. We're really conscious that a lot of our readers will be old punks, actually. We think that's still very much a part of their lives. They're still punks inside, right?
Yes, well, that's part of their what made them what they are, isn't it?
Absolutely.
When did the first issue of the magazine come out?
OK, so the first print issue will be out October. It'll be a quarterly publication, so work that out from there. It's every 3 months. With the website is up and running now. So the website and the print issues will be different, although there'll be some content the same on both. But the website's already up there, and we already have some articles and editorial up there to read already, which is nice because we're getting a good response from people. We're getting to see what subjects are floating people's boats and lighting their fires. But yeah, the first one will be out in October. We're doing a special deal at the moment. Am I allowed to say about that?
I should think
so.
Yeah.
You can subscribe now and you get the first issue free. So and then you don't have to keep having it if you hate it, although we hope you will keep on having it because it's going to be really good. But you can do that through the website. www.silvermagazine.co.uk, all one word, silvermagazine.co.uk.
How much is the printed version going to cost?
Okay, so it'll be £3.25. It should be a good old meaty thing. You know, it's built to last for 3 months, so I think that's good value for money, I reckon.
And that's £3.25 per issue, obviously.
Per issue. And actually, if you are a subscriber, like an ongoing subscriber, you also get automatic entry into our Silver Travel Club, which is really cool because there's lots of deals, you know, special rates for breaks and holidays, but you only get to get access to those if you either buy into the membership club or you become a subscriber, in which case you get that free. It's one of the added extras. We've got some amazing stuff. We're working with really cool travel operators, so there's a few deals up there at the moment that you can see. You know, the range for everything from a weekend in Dorset to a trip to Chile, and you know, and there's some really good rates on there. So, but yeah, that's just for silver people. So.
That's one of the things I've found out running this programme is how adventurous some people are in their later years. You know.
Do you know what? I think that sense of adventure is something that we end up compromising as we maybe grow into our sort of 30s and 40s and we have businesses or jobs, we have to focus on kids and family. And actually, my parents said when they were in their 60s that that was the best time of their lives. They had enough money to do what they wanted. Us kids were all grown up and taking care of ourselves. And they were happy with themselves and with each other. And they had an absolute ball. You know, they travelled the world. They did the whole Route 66 thing across America and, you know, camping and all sorts. And think 60s are kind of the new 40s. I kind of get that feeling. I don't know. It changes with each generation, but I don't, you know, you're right. They're really adventurous, which is why I say that we need something to celebrate that, really.
Indeed. Well, that's great. So if people want to see the sort of things you've got in mind, it's a case of going to the website anytime now.
Yeah.
And from the website, you can actually take out a subscription to the magazine when it becomes available in October.
Yes, I think there's a form to fill in, or you can email us anyway. We get people emailing and just send your name and address in. We can add you to the list. We have also got a really good Facebook page where we share and engage quite a lot with our readers, and that's getting busier and busier. But you can see that from the website. Actually, if you just go to the website, all that stuff is there. You can click through and join.
Now, going the other way, there are still some probably especially older people around who probably don't even have access to the internet. Can they contact you by telephone, for example?
The best number to call us on would be 01273 257037.
Okay, so if all else fails, the telephone is always available.
Yes, it is.
And presumably you could, in principle, take out a subscription to the magazine via the telephone.
Of course. No, please do give us a call. Actually, you know, it's good to hear from everybody in any way.
Yes. Okay, well, thanks very much, Sam.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. I was talking to Sam Harrington Lowe about the new magazine for the over 50s, Silver. If you want to find out more about the magazine, you can go to their website, which is www.silvermagazine.co.uk, or you can phone them on 01273 257 037. Now, back in July, the Saltdean Lido reopened after being closed for a period of 7 years for refurbishment. A few days before it was due to open, Chris English went along to see Derek Chester, and he put it to Derek that the time of opening was imminent.
It is. I thought this moment would never come. It's been a really long journey. It's been 7 years since the previous leaseholder announced plans to fill in the pool with concrete and build flats. And finally, 7 years later, we're opening this beautifully restored Lido. So it's very exciting.
And what's the history of Saltdean Lido?
Well, it has a very colourful history. Saltdean Lido was the brainchild of Charles Neville, the developer of Saltdean, and he used his trusted architect, Richard Jones, to come up with a brand new Lido design which would set it apart from existing Lidos in the UK. And so between them, they came up with an American-inspired Lido, and its architecture, basically famous for its modernist design, used the best traditions of modernism in Europe as well as in America to come up with this overall scheme, which gives one the experience of perhaps being transported back to the 30s or being on the set of a Poirot movie. So the rotunda is designed to look like the bow of an ocean liner, and the outstretched wings either side, which hug the pool, take their inspiration from the aerodynamic lines of aircraft. So it really is a special building.
And moving on from that, the building itself hasn't actually been restored yet, has it?
No, that is phase two of the project. So we always said that Saltdean Lido was a very expensive building to restore. We were very lucky with our grant applications to the Coastal Community Fund, the Social Investment Bank, and People's Millions. That enabled us to restore the swimming pool, build a brand new plant room to heat and treat the water, and a wet play area for children, and a new change room facility for around $2.9 million. But the main building, that has hoarding in front of it at the moment, because it's almost 80 years old. It's really a grand old lady, which needs a very expensive facelift.
And is that going to happen?
Oh, yes, it will happen. It needs some very specialised treatment to the reinforced concrete, to the steelwork, which is rusted. The whole building, its existing facilities, infrastructure, is all pretty much as it was from the 30s. So we're going to have to raise a lot of money to restore the main building. But once that has been achieved, the building will then provide the revenue income, which will then fund the swimming pools. Because something we really would like people to understand is that Saltdean Lido is not subsidised by the local council. That's something which we've been aware of for a very long time, which is why we developed a business plan to make Saltdean Lido profitable. So unlike other wonderful pools we have in our region, King Alfred, Prince Regent, Sea Haven, all lovely swimming pools, indoor pools, they're subsidised. Saltdean Lido isn't. So this is why we've developed a pricing scheme to recover some of the costs. It won't recover all of the costs for heating and treating the water. But eventually, once the building is restored, that will provide the revenue streams which will make Salt Dean Lido sustainable. And that's what makes this project exciting.
And the pool itself, to get back to that, because that's the thing that everybody can see where they're going by on the car or the bus. That's ready, is it? It certainly looks it.
It certainly is. We had a lifeguard in there today giving it its final deep clean. It's a lovely Mediterranean blue, which you may have seen. We went back to the original information about the 1938 pool, and it was described as Mediterranean blue. So it's a lot deeper than a lot of the council pools that you will have. So we've gone back for that sort of old school look. But it's heated. It's heated to 27 degrees, which for an outdoor pool is fantastic. And I can tell you, for one, I used to use the Lido when I was a kid in the 80s, and it was cold. You would jump in, you would show off, you would splash around, you'd do a few lengths, and then you would get out and warm back up again, ready for your next dip. But I think people will be really pleased to find that when they come along and use Salt Dean Lido this time around, it's really warm, so much warmer than the sea, and you can happily spend quite a few hours swimming up and down, enjoying the 40-metre pool.
And the general thought of an open-air pool is that it's not a good idea, because in the rain, whereas you can get out of the weather, it's a lovely day today, but it might not be. So presumably the heating overcomes that, because it doesn't matter if it's raining or not.
That's it, exactly. And not only that, you know, we know what the British sometimes is like. Sometimes, you know, we have showers, or it's, you know, it can become a bit chilly. But throughout the summer, it was going to be heated to 27 degrees, come rain or shine. And I think that would be very attractive, because there's something special about swimming in the open air. It's very good for the mind and spirit. And to be out, you know, spending so much time in the sun, it's going to be a good experience for people. That's something that we want to encourage. A lot of kids today, you know, are often glued to their tablets and, you know, whatever great gaming their systems they're playing on. Lidos are a good old-fashioned safe place. You know, it's great to swim in the sea, but you can't always have every part lifeguarded along the beaches. So in the pool, it's a safe place where teenagers can come by themselves without parents having to worry about them, and for families to come and use the pool and its heated water.
So when exactly is it all open?
From the 8th of July, we'll be open every single day right the way through the summer, and I think a couple of weeks after the kids go back to school as well. And we'll see how the season goes. Obviously, if we have an Indian summer, there's always the potential that we can extend that. Go to our website, which is saltdeanlido.co.uk. It's taken us 7 years to get this far, and we want people to come along and enjoy it.
Chris English was talking to Derek Chester of Salt Dean Lido, and the Lido reopened in July. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time. But in the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me to let me know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items you might like me to cover in future editions, I'd love to hear from you. There are two ways of getting in touch. You can either contact me by email at the following address, info@greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's info, spelled I-N-F-O, at greymattersproductions, which is typed all as one word, .org.uk. Or you can contact me via the Radio Reverb website. If you go to the website and find the page that's devoted to At Home This Morning, you can send me an email from there. And whichever method you choose, I'd love to hear from you. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening. And until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.